Bridget, thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, Ruby. A pleasure to talk about radio on radio.
Oh, I love it. I live for it. When my producer showed me this this story, I was like, oh my God, we're talking about radio on radio. I love it. Amazing. So, all right, radio history. What was the catalyst for the rising popularity of radio broadcasts in the 1920s?
Well, radio or wireless really was the more evocative term. The notion of a technology that was wireless fascinated the public. And initially, radio had been used as a telecommunications medium, but by the 1920s, it became apparent that radio could be about more than just sort of one-to-one communication. It could be about broadcasting from one point to a broad audience. And so radio was to constitute the first form of electronic media in the world, and it created the capacity for the world to be brought into people's homes.
Yeah, wow. It's amazing. It's amazing thinking about it because, you know, we're also used to radio now. It's awesome to think that wireless was like this incredibly out of this world thing. So
that's right. Yeah. It was seen as a marvel of science and a way to conquer distance. The radio that became sort of predominant in, say, the middle decades of the 20th century was largely local radio. You could hear radio stations from your city or from your country town or perhaps your state if you listened to what was sort of known as the second network on the ABC, what we now know as Radio National. But there was also the capacity to listen to radio, especially in the early years, in the 1920s and 1930s. It was possible to have some powerful receivers that would enable you to hear radio from the Pacific, for instance, from Mexico. So there was this sort of extraordinary capacity to learn about other parts of the world.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, how has the Hindenburg disaster, which I think it's very ironic that a very popular and well-used audio editing program is called Hindenburg. I've used it before. And it's funny because the Hindenburg disaster. So how exactly has the Hindenburg disaster influenced how radio should be heard and how it's broadcast?
Well, it was almost by chance what happened in May 1937 when a journalist, Herbert Morrison, was experimenting with recording news bulletins for radio when the Hindenburg airship happened to burst into flames. And people then thought that his commentary, which sort of began, "Oh, the humanity," was a live broadcast, but it actually was a recording. But it was really seen as an extraordinary achievement for and moment for radio when this announcer from Chicago stood on an air station in New Jersey and was sort of seen to be covering this German airship combusting, killing 35 people. So that was one of the really sort of major moments for the capacity of radio to be demonstrated. And in the 1930s and 1940s, what emerged were known as actuality broadcasts, where increasingly portable technology, it was fairly cumbersome to begin with, but the technology.
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Major events unraveling or unfurling, and also reporters, radio reporters. By the late 1940s, there was a prominent one on 2SM in Sydney, would go around with their recorders talking to the ordinary people and covering, you know, fairly everyday events for people to actually hear them and not just read about them or imagine them.
Yeah. Now, in the early 1950s, the first all-transistor radio was introduced. Now, in what ways has this changed how we listen to radio?
It changed it quite a lot. When radio emerged in the 1920s and 1930s, it was really seen as a force for family togetherness. Radio sets were quite expensive, so there was generally only one in the house, if you could afford that. It was a fairly big, cumbersome piece of equipment that increasingly became a sort of form of furniture. So there was, you know, some quite beautiful cabinetry devised and made around radio sets and radio periodicals and advertisements from radio retailers were full of pictures of mum, dad, the children and perhaps the grandparents sitting around this and having this communal listening experience. The emergence of the transistor radio in the 1950s changes that quite significantly. Also, the price of radios was coming down, so it was becoming more common for individual members of the family to be able to have their own radio receiver. And the transistor radio also enables radio to leave the house. I mean, there are some quite amusing photos of radio sets on beaches in the 1930s and the 1940s, or people having picnics with a radio sitting outside their car, but really the transistor radio, being small and reasonably inexpensive, allows people to take their transistor to the cricket and listen to the commentary. It allows them to go to the beach much more easily than, you know, lugging this enormous thing that I was talking about a minute ago. And it also makes radio something more of a youth medium, because the rise of the transistor coincides with the rise of top 40 radio and the rise of the disc jockey. Of course, well, interestingly, I think the importance or relevance of the transistor radio has, I think, re-emerged in recent months in Australia with the bushfire emergency, because people are in those areas are losing electricity and sometimes mobile signals. So having a battery-operated transistor radio is something that is still important and still valuable. And I went and bought another one the other day for our holiday house, was reminded of the importance of this technology for being able to hear what is going on in emergency and in other situations.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Bridget. Unfortunately, that's all the time we've got, but this has been awesome. I love talking radio history.
Lovely, Ruby. Always happy to do it.